Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. Today we welcome Eric, Austin, and Steve from Philadelphia metal band Prosper or Perish to the podcast. Prosper or Perish self-released Shroud of Serpents on July 29th. Links to snag the record digitally and on CD are in the show notes. The guys talk about their personal musical histories and the formation of the band, how member changes and COVID have given the band a fresh start, and the themes behind Shroud of Serpents. I love getting to share new music. Independent bands don't always have a platform to get their music heard and to tell their story, and I'm excited to be a part of sharing artists I love. Stick around after the interview to hear my review of the new Norma Jean record, Death Rattle, Sing For Me, which is out this Friday, August 12th. Before we get to the interview, I wanted to share an email I got about the As the Story Grows mailing list. This is from friend of the pod, Seth Werkheiser. Seth said, "Dude, loving these emails. Love how you're showing more of you in these and not just posting a bunch of links. And I learned something about you too. We share a love of albums. Yes. Keep it up, man." You can find a link to the mailing list in the show notes or on asthestorygrows.com. Join us. I'm always sharing anecdotes about my week, how I feel about the weather, albums I love, as well as keeping you up to date on what's happening with As the Story Grows. The email on Monday had previews not just of today's podcast, but also of Friday's pod. So join us. Speaking of Seth, let me direct you to Metal Bandcamp Gift Club. Not a sponsor, just a cool quote-unquote organization. You sign up with your birthday and a Bandcamp wish list. Whenever there's a birthday, Seth sends an email with a link to a wish list. You can make someone's birthday by buying a stranger an album from their Bandcamp wish list. And in turn, on your birthday, strangers will buy you some tunes. It's a great way to make someone's birthday. I bought records for people and have received records, and it's one of those reminders of good on the internet. So check them out at metalbandcampgift.club. Spread some joy, spread some music, have fun. All right, enjoy getting to know Prosper or Perish.
Oh, Brian, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing good, man.
That's awesome. What is it you guys do that you all work together?
Yeah, we sold safety equipment for municipalities and government agencies, and pretty much anything that like you see out on the road, like traffic cones, drums, like all that shit. Like
stuff that you run over when you're like driving home in the middle of it's too late.
Nice.
And we sell you more.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. That's rad. Where in Philadelphia are you guys?
So we work out in Westchester.
Okay.
So it's just about like 40 minutes west of Philly.
Okay. Is that where you guys live and are from? Or
I live out here. Steve's from Willow Grove, which is like 30 minutes away. And
I'm in Philly.
Eric's actually in Philly, as well as Armin, the drummer.
Nice. I spent 6.5 years in Philly. I lived in Fishtown.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
We practice right by Castor in Frankfurt. Nice. If you know where that's at.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a real studios on right off Aramingo.
Really nice part of town.
Yeah. Yeah. Gentrification hadn't worked that far north yet.
Still waiting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, if you guys want to just go around, introduce yourself and what you do in the band.
Yeah, Eric Benitez, I play guitar.
Austin Perez, also play guitar.
Steve Stanley, I scream.
Nice. Fred, what got each of you into music?
I would say for me, I mean, it's just always been there. Parents were into music. They would like go to concerts. I remember them telling me that like right after I was born, they like left me with my grandparents so that they could go see Pink Floyd. I have like vivid memories of my dad coming home from Tower Records and him pulling out a Black Sabbath from that yellow bag with red lettering, putting on. He was like, yo, man, listen to this song, putting on Electric Funeral. And that was sort of like me, like just my first like little bit of like, holy crap, what is this? This is amazing. That type of stuff. And then just continued on listening to music, playing guitar at like 13 and just never stopping.
Pretty much the same. My parents weren't quite as musical in the sense of like going to shows or really like showing me stuff. I mean, but my dad was super into, I don't know, just like, I guess all that stuff that dads listen to. So like Rolling Stones, AC/DC, Santana, just a lot of like really heavily guitar centric music was always on in the house. And yeah, I don't know. I think I never really thought about like playing an instrument until I was about 12, 13. And, you know, I just had friends that were starting to form bands, just little punk bands. And a good friend of mine who passed away, he sold me my first guitar. He, you know, got me all going with it. And then from there, I don't know, joining this band. I guess I'm like kind of the second new guy now, but pretty much just joining other people's bands and learning their music is what's, you know, contributed to the way that I play guitar and the way that I write music now. So
yeah, for me, it started with my love for sports and then my hatred for sports. When all the strikes started to happen in the early 90s, and I realized that sports gave up on a young boy like myself, my dad asked me if he wanted him to show me music, and I said sure. So he got me into classic rock, and then the 90s continued on, so I got into harder stuff there. And I played drums for about 8 years, and then I was in a car accident, and I wanted to do something that was still percussive, and I realized I had somewhat of a scream that I wanted to just work on, so I kept working on that. And this is the only band I've ever been in. I've just been in this band since 2007.
That's awesome.
2007, dude.
Yeah. That's crazy. It's 2007 doesn't seem like that long ago. But
it doesn't, right? Like, how old are you?
I'll be 38.
30. Okay.
Yeah, I'm 40. 35.
Yeah.
I'll be 30 in September.
Right. But it's like, yeah, my daughter turns 8. And I'm like, 2014 was yesterday, but no, it was not yesterday. Everything is crazy. That's awesome. Well, how did Prosper Parish get started?
So Prosper, Steve is the only original member of Prosper Parish. Yes. It started out with a couple of guys, a couple of friends of ours. I'm trying to think, did they mostly meet at a vocational school, right? Like that's how
I can't answer that. Basically, I finally had transportation because I had so many underage drinking fines when I was young. I finally was so excited to get a license, and I started looking for people outside of my hometown who wanted to do the kind of music I was into. And I answered a Craigslist ad for these four guys who had a demo. And I went back a week later with the material with vocals, and then they welcomed me in. And that was the fall of 2006. And then in March of 2007, we did a demo. And then we lost our guitar player that summer because he had to pursue a career in steam fitting. And then Eric was, I guess, giving lessons to him.
Well, no. I knew Chris. So the two original guitarists, Sal and Chris, they were pretty much the ones that wrote the demo. I had grown up across the street from Chris, and he and I were like in our first bands like together. Like when we started playing guitar at like 13, like we would just jam out and learn music together, learn Metallica songs, all that shit. And then we branched off into separate bands. He did his thing, I did my thing. When my band broke up, Sal was getting ready to leave the band. He was just like, yo, dude, you want to just join up with us? I was like, fuck yeah, I'll do that. And I joined the band shortly afterwards, like end of 07, early 08.
Boy!
Where'd the name come from?
Name came from
it was some documentary our bass player had seen about the possible fall or rise of humanity. And the closing line in the documentary was, will humanity prosper or perish? So he brought that to the table the next day, and that's what we went with.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
You want to know what we were called before Prosper?
Yeah, I was going to say it's a lot better than...
Yeah, what were you called before?
Because immediately when I came into the band, I was like, can we please think about changing this name? It was called Fight the Day, and I wasn't really on board with it. But I'm thankful for that documentary.
Yeah, Fight the Day has real real hardcore vibes.
Yeah. And that's sort of like what the original demo was. Yeah. I think it's still on our Bandcamp, right?
Yeah, I still have the original three tracks without vocals. I have that disc still in my possession. I smile at it every
now. But yeah, it was the first couple songs that we did on that EP were definitely more hardcore influence than sort of how we've veered off.
And the name definitely allows for us to do lighter melodic and then evil, more evil as well.
Is there, I listened to some of the back catalog, but not a lot. Is there a lot of melodic stuff in that back catalog? Because there's like none on this new record. I mean,
little hints,
pretty unrelenting.
we've been trying to just go harder and faster with each of the releases. But yeah, we even on the original demo there's little bits of like clean parts and just sort of little melodies that were in there. Then when we did the first album Defiant, that was the album that I started helping with the songwriting and arranging of music, and that sort of brought in my influence of just like In Flames and trying to get a little bit more melodic death metal into the band, and that sort of steered where we are at now.
Well, Eric is also the only one in the band with actual college credit music education.
A learned musician, if you will.
Steve, what influenced your vocal style? Because you have these really great like raspy demon screams, and then you get the low gutturals. Like, was there anybody you were drawing influence from?
No, I used to make fun of screaming as I was getting into heavier music. I used to make fun of it. I always thought it was funny that people had to scream their words because they couldn't they could not express themselves any other way. So then I went to go see I finally saw Pantera live for the first time in 2000. And when I saw that live, I kind of realized what it was all about. And it was about energy. And I started diving into screaming stuff after that. I first learned how to scream by mimicking Aaron Lewis's screams from Stained, because like I could actually do that. And then that just allowed me to springboard my technique. But I've always loved Phil from Pantera. And I love I really loved the high-low style screaming that was coming out, and even Black Dolly Murder, Trevor, he was my biggest influence. Rest in peace. He was my biggest influence in that style. And even when I heard Black Dolly Murder on Halo for the first time, I thought it was trash. I made, because I wasn't ready for it yet. I went back a week later. I saw a music video for Contagion and realized that was the same band. I pretty much threw my burnt CD in the trash. And I went back and I listened to it again, and I was kicking myself in the ass because I realized it was a masterpiece.
Dug it out of the trash.
Yeah. Downloaded it again.
Yeah. It's funny how much you can like think something's like just a piece of shit and then be like, oh no, this is actually brilliant. And like, why did I not like this?
Yeah.
Crazy how everything up here just kind of shifts. Like you said, like you're not really ready for it. Mm-hmm. Until you hear it somewhere down the road and you're like, oh wait, this is actually awesome.
Yeah, I got into, so I kind of just went ran with that, and then realized that I shouldn't really be trying to mimic these people. I need to kind of like just make my own character, and that's it. Just started over the last during the last of the part of the last album tour for Invoke, when we were just doing a bunch of shows for that album. I started to realize what I had to do, and that's when I started to develop a different type of character.
Bring me progress.
Why the gap between Invoke and the new record?
The reason for that gap was because of bits of band changes, band member changes coming in and out of the group, a little bit of life getting in the way, and then we had that fun little bit of little bit of a pandemic sort of pushed everything back about like two years.
Right. Had you guys already written and recorded the new record before COVID, or did that give you space to tackle?
We had the songs pretty much written, but we didn't have them like finalized, like the full finalized recordings. We took that time we first did the rough demo of like, all right, here's a mic in a room and this is us playing these live. Then we did the demo tracking. Then we re-recorded them all again, just pre-pro and ourselves. And then finally, when we thought that they were in like a good spot, we went and took them to record with AJ Vienna from Cognitive. He was the one that ended up recording the album for us. And at that point, we reached out when we thought they were good enough to lay down.
Nice.
The production phase was pretty long, right? I mean, I came back into that. So that was probably maybe somewhat my fault. Yeah, you guys got to rebound pretty quick.
We lost a guitarist after Invoke. Austin came in and helped us do all the shows we did for that album. And then Austin had to step out. And then our drummer's brother came in on guitar. And then we lost our drummer, Sam, and his brother.
Oh, man.
Pretty much after the album was almost entirely written. And that's when all the scrambling was there to try to find another drummer. Austin came back.
We found a drummer, but then COVID hit and he didn't really continue with us. So we had to find another new drummer. And it's been fun.
So does this feel like a fresh start?
I think it's the strongest we've ever been.
And especially with the way that this album went, sort of with the last album, I feel as if we may have like rushed into it a little bit. We could have been a bit more tight and sort of with how the songs were. With this one, we learned from going into that a bit more of a rushed experience with sort of trying to have a little bit more polished and knowing what we wanted to do with this.
Crowd of Serpents. I'm always trying to make sure that titles, album titles, things like that I'm trying to think of haven't really been done before, because I want people to search it and find only really us.
Yeah.
as much as I can. But that whole idea, I drive the turnpike every day to work, and you see real evil in people out there on the road, and then you tell me, you come home, you turn on the news, it's there, you know, you realize some friends of yours aren't your friends, it's just hiding, and there's too much of it. People aren't nice enough to each other, and there's just too many evil people in the world. So that whole concept was just like, the world is shrouded by, you know, evil represented by snakes. And also at the same time, I've been breeding snakes for about 10 years, and I felt like I was drowning and I needed to sell them all. And I felt shrouded by serpents. Like I was in a shroud of serpents at the same time. So it kind of had that layer to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a lyrical theme that carries, like the evils of the world and people?
Yeah. Throughout the, on several of the songs, that's kind of the theme. There's just different aspects of it, you know, kind of washing it away, starting anew. What we all kind of represent and what it feels like. That's what the Fit for Vulture song kind of feels. It's just like, oh yeah, we're just trapped here, killing each other until it's time to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Is most of your lyrical inspiration like real world, what you're seeing, or are you drawing from like movies, films, books, or?
So So the demo was kind of just me finding myself. The Defiant album was kind of came after I had an accident and almost died and didn't. And that was sort of like me, like my second chance at life, kind of lyrical content. And then Invoke the Tempest was me kind of trying to fight off the desire to party every day, because when you almost die, you kind of don't want to do anything except live your life to the fullest. Mm-hmm. And then I realized you kind of got to put limitations on that, or else you will die. So Invoke the Tempest was sort of like lyrical content about me just kind of fighting my demons away. And then this was just me just kind of disgusted with the world on this album.
What are you hoping to do with the rest of 2022? Are you hoping to tour or keep it local, try to build out from Philly outward, or?
A little bit of both. We're definitely looking into doing a few weekender tours, going up and down the coast, maybe west, go westward. But we're just trying to play as many cool shows as we can.
Yeah.
And
go south when it's cold, go north when it's warm.
Yeah, is it tough still finding shows as like an independent band? Because I mean, I know for like 21 and even earlier this year, it's like everybody's on tour again, and so like everything's fucking full all the time.
We are about to find out how difficult it really is. We're kind of at that stage right now, getting ready to just book a bunch of shows.
Yeah. I feel like it would be easier as well. Like once the record is released and we have a ton of content that we've been shooting with our friend Joe Fidel and Ted Waters, who have been doing photo shoots and video shoots, so we can give you guys like, sorry.
a truck coming by.
Expo Logistics trying to get up in the interview.
We gotta, safety never sleeps.
Shameless plug.
We gotta get it to people.
But I feel like it'll be a lot easier because kind of going off of what Eric said earlier, you know, even before we went into the studio, I mean, I came back and these guys pretty much had a lot of the heavy work done as far as writing the record. And then I guess I kind of put my spin on it as much as I could going into the studio. And then from the time we were done tracking, just kind of getting our drummer up to speed, like with some other songs, and then filming, like we have a lot of content for you guys that we'll be releasing sort of slowly. So I feel like as far as booking shows, it might be a little easier to grasp and sink our teeth into once, again, the album's out, we're releasing content and all that's done, so we can just focus on meeting cool bands, networking, and trying to, you know, play as far away from home as we can for as many people as possible.
There will be content coming out while we book shows.
Nice.
It's hard too, man, because there's so many, it's kind of a double-edged sword because there's so many great bands coming out now. And at, like you said, you know, everybody, now that everybody's allowed to play after the whole quarantine everything, it's a bit overwhelming. And you know, we've been out of it for a little while now. I mean, we still have a solid amount of friends here.
Yeah.
You know, Dark Waters End, they're amazing. Guys in Cognitive, Hath. So I think that might just be the biggest challenge, is just kind of like deciding where our niche is, like bands that we fit with, and, you know, just making friends with new bands.
Well, another interesting thing about the pandemic, you know, you come out of it on the other side, also tack onto it 2 years where we were, you know, not playing shows prior to the pandemic. And then you come out four years later after playing the show, and you kind of see what bands, I guess you want, quote unquote, survived.
Yeah.
Wanted to continue on.
Yeah, seriously.
Who stuck it out. A lot of them that we did play with are no longer around, but
Left of Vanish is doing shit again. See that?
I can't wait.
Thanks to Eric, Austin, and Steve for joining me. Make sure you check out Shroud of Serpents. All right, here's my review of Norma Jean's Death Rattle, Sing For Me. I've come to a place as a music fan where I just don't trust the singles as a gauge for my enjoyment of an album or a band. Far too often recently, I've not cared for a single or two, but like an album and found those songs work better within the context of a record. And with Norma Jean specifically, I've always been a bigger fan of the B-side of their records. The back half has always struck a chord with me more than the front half. So even though I was a little unsure of the singles, especially Call for the Blood, I wasn't willing to pass judgment without hearing the whole record. And I'm glad I waited to pass judgment. 1994 kicks off the record. The beginning of this record is very harsh. It's discordant with some opening ambient, and the guitar tones just feel harsh and tinnier than I'm used to hearing from a Norma Jean record. In a way, it reminds me of the guitar tone from Anti-Mother, but those guitars felt a little more lo-fi in their thinness, and these feel more harsh. Corey screams, "Happy songs make me feel like a liar," and it was a line that hit me when I heard it, and it has continued to resonate with me. It's a great kickoff to this record. The sparse field of sound transitions into Call for the Blood. There's an electronic soundscape that opens the track. It feels completely new and original for Norma Jean, but it's also a risk the band is taking, opening their record with electronics and soundscapes, and it's a far cry from the punishing openers and wall of sound we've come to expect from the band, especially on their last two records. But the payoff is just around the corner, and sticking with this album pays off. Spearmint Revolt sonically feels a lot like The Anti-Mother and Meridional, my two favorite Norma Jean records. Memorial Horde brings the frenetic energy down and gives space for ambient guitars and Corey singing. These quiet moments have always been some of my favorite from Norma Jean, and it's an underappreciated aspect of the band's sound. Aria Obscura picks the energy up while still relying heavily on melody and clean singing. Despite its less driven nature, the song is just an angry anthem, and there are also strong Korn nu metal vibes in the guitar riff. In the same way that Wrongdoers would swing from extremes, Norma Jean brings back some of the chaos with Any Percent. But unlike Wrongdoers, the band anchors the chaos of the verses with a strong hook. And by now it's clear that Norma Jean is angry. These are some of the most pissed off Norma Jean songs I've heard since The Anti-Mother. The band really finds a balance between just being angry and upset and melodic and introspective on this record. Parallela basically serves as the interlude between the A-side and the B-side of the album. Wave is a huge wall of guitar that hits in the same vein of Polar Similar and All Hail. They really kick off this B-side strong with just this crushing wall of guitar sound that is no longer harsh like the beginning of the record, but very warm and just building and buzzing and gets you going. This is an instant favorite of mine. Killing Word continues in the same vein. It's just a picture of what I think Norma Jean does best. Penny Margs is the chillest and most low-key Norma Jean song ever. Acoustic guitars, just like slow, open, just lots of space. Until it explodes right before the 3-minute mark, you're waiting for the track to take off and explode, and the band doesn't disappoint. Elroy translates to The God Who Sees, and it also serves as an interlude to the album's final two tracks. Sleep Explosion, which is the third single from the record, is just an angry banger. And then the album closes with Heartache, coming in at 8 minutes. In vibes alone, the track feels like a companion piece to Falling from the Sky Day 7, which is my all-time favorite Norma Jean song, and this is probably one of Norma Jean's best closing tracks that they've ever written. Norma Jean's consistency and creativity continues to be on display with each new record. The band finds innovative ways to build on their sound while doing something new and fresh. The band tapped into an anger that I haven't heard since The Anti-Mother, while finding a new level of atmosphere, melody, and chaos. There are elements that touch on every stage of the band's discography, and yet it feels completely new. And maybe that's the benefit of a rotating cast of members. What feels familiar comes from Corey, while the new members contribute to bring something fresh to LP number 9. Death Rattle is not an album to miss, and I imagine it will be on a lot of best of 2022 lists. I know it will be on mine. Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our intro music was written and composed by Jeremy Hunt. The As the Story Grows theme is by Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and give us a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, you can join us at patreon.com/asthestorygrows. Be a part of our community and join the ongoing conversation over on Discord. If you enjoy this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.